I've just driven up to one of the high spots of the farm. It's called Cantley Hill, and in front of me are 5 acres, that's 2 hectares of overwinter wild bird seed mix. And I visited this particular spot with Matthew about three podcasts ago, and we started to enjoy the wildlife that was feeding on all the seeds that's being provided. There was a very large flock of goldfinches, over 50. There was quite a number of linnets here that we saw. Various other seed-eating birds right around the periphery, several pheasants feeding away as well. And over the last 20 years or so, DEFRA, Department of Food and Rural Affairs, has been paying farmers to plant overwinter wild bird seed mix as a way of encouraging wildlife birds, in particular seed-eating birds, back onto farms to help halt and reverse the decline of many of the farmland species. Birds like yellowhammers, which we have lots here as well, they feed on the seeds. And this is a particularly valuable area because it got woodland and tall hedges not far away. So somewhere for the birds to perch if they feel a bit threatened, or when they've eaten all the seed they can eat, they'll go and sit there and preen and sing. Now, something happened. There's a kind of a loophole in the overwinter wild bird seed mix, what we call the prescription, and it's that you can plant it, but many farms, as a way of diversification, have shoots on the farms. It's quite a normal thing to do, but the loophole is that you can actually shoot through these areas of overwinter wild bird seed mix. You can shoot the game that's legal to shoot. You know, if rabbits come out, you could shoot those. Hares, perhaps, and partridges. And some of those, obviously, like the grey partridge, for instance, is a red list species. So it's a kind of a loophole. But I've sort of scratched my head because the environmental stewardship scheme for birds hasn't really yielded the successes, considering the millions and millions of pounds that have been put into schemes like this, hasn't yielded the level of success that perhaps it should have done. And I'm doing this kind of very unscientific experiment because I don't have a firearms license. I don't have a shotgun where I can come out and let off and just do that. But I have the next best thing to try and conduct the experiment in a very small way, just the 5 acres. There's another 80, 90 acres of overwinter wild bird seed mix on the other side of the farm, which I certainly don't interfere. But it's been scratching my head as to what the effect is if I let off some bangs once a week. So I'm kind of copying what would happen on a normal farm where you have normal shoots or even casual shoots where you can go through areas like this, and the cover's quite tall. It's kind of up to my armpits. There's thistles there, lots of barley, so lots of seed, millet I can see, couple of patches of teasels there, and there's obviously going to be a lot of bird life there. But I started the experiment just after Matthew left 3 weeks ago, and I've been conducting it just once a week for about an hour, about the time it would take to sort of put the guns through and flush out the birds. And obviously there'd be bangs, and it's that kind of shooting, not the small birds, but the effect it has on the small birds. And that's the bit that intrigues me. So we're now coming up to going to be week 4 of the experiment, and in front of me I've got a couple of little of the bird scaring bangers which I hang up in the crop, but this one's quite close to me, so I'm just going to light the fuse, hopefully, and throw it over the other side, and and that's the effect. And do you know what, I'm looking ahead right across the 5 acres of field, and there is not a single bird. And yet 3 weeks ago or so, when Matthew was here, This would have been alive, absolutely alive with birds. I'm just going to open the truck door and let Rat out because he's quite excited about that bang. I'm sorry it was so loud, and if you're listening to this early in the morning, that made you jump out of bed, I should think. But anyway, there's nothing, and that's the bit that's intrigued me. It is only a loophole, and I must say some farmers do observe the kind of moral fact that if you've got overwinter wild bird seed mix, it's public money for public goods, if you like, so you shouldn't then go through and either scare the birds or shoot for commercial reasons whatsoever. And certainly it's all part of this new way of thinking about the environment, about rewilding. Certainly you don't go and kill or shoot for fun or for sport or for predator control the animals that would live in a sort of environment like in front of me. I'm just walking into the area now. In total, I let off about three of those bangs at the same time each week, and so this is about as far as I can walk in now. Loads and loads of seeds, and yes, there's not a single bird. Having said that, there's a rook way in the distance flying around, but I wonder, because I come and visit this spot without letting off any more bangs, I promise you, during the course of the week, and the same result is here. I just stand and watch and look for where the birds are feeding, and it's a wildlife desert now. There's just no small birds here at all, and you can't blame them. I mean, because I'm basically, instead of shooting, I'm bird scaring, which is in a way what shooting is when you have the guns going through and the dogs running through this. So it's a kind of plea to the powers that be, if you like, particularly those in DEFRA who sponsor these crops, that as farmers we should be kind of observing the way, the new way of looking after and observing and caring for wildlife. It's a kind of change round in policy. A lot of people be angry as though I'm a kind of spoil sport, if you excuse the pun, but I'm absolutely not, because it's fine to shoot on the rest of your shooting estate, but not in these overwinter wild birds mix. As I said, it's just a loophole in the law, or in the prescription which farmers have. You can put all the seeds in and get it all to grow beautifully, but it is for the birds and not for just the ones that you don't shoot. You know, it's just a little bit of a mix-up, to be honest. So there we are. Well, Rat's sort of looking around. He's rather bemused by that bang, and he's being very good now. He's staying very close to me. Perhaps I should do this a bit more often. That scared the living daylights out of him. But right, we'll go back in the truck. Anyway, it's just an interesting little experiment, and I'll carry it on for one more week, and I will do the monitoring all week long. So I visit the field two or three times every day during the week as I'm just going about my normal farming business. Just sit and watch, and no more bangs, only on that sort of period of 1 hour once a week. Sort of just to copy what would normally happen on a well-run, normal shooting estate, where you have a shoot a week, usually on a Saturday. There we are, bit tradition there, but sort of questioning what happens with the modern way of looking after the environment. Should we be doing that? There'll be lots of response from people who said, I don't deserve to exist, or a pat on the back. I'm always nervous about pats on the back, you know. I think of poor Julius Caesar. Anyway, there we are. Not a bird in sight, I promise you. It's very suspicious at this time of the year, because I can remember back well over 30 years now. Was it 1987? Around about the 16th, 17th of October, looking round High Ash Farm at the moment, it's all well organised. But back then, one night, it was chaos. The wind blew one way, and I did manage to record it. It's the famous hurricane. And then it went like this, completely still and quiet like it is at the moment. There's no hurricanes forecast today, fortunately. And then the wind came back and blew the opposite direction. The trees were all in full leaf, as they are at the moment. We're standing underneath an oak tree right in the centre of the farmyard.
One that survived.
The one that survived. Oaks were well rooted, but a lot came out by their roots. Probably because there'd been 2 or 3 inches of rain ahead of that wind. And although the trees didn't snap off, many of them, what did happen is the soil was so sodden, the root plate, where all the soil and the roots on, just peeled up. And just the other side here in the farmhouse gardens, there were 12 beautiful cedar trees, and the whole lot came over. I just left one, number 13, survived. So instead of being unlucky, that was lucky. And it took me 3 years to clear it all up, really. But basically had to give the timber away. There were some magnificent cedar trunks, and sadly we just cut them up, and there was a huge digger came in for a month. Oh, that was an acorn coming off the oak tree right above us.
Here it is, yep.
You found it.
Bouncing onto the tin roof.
Yes, there's a tin roof above the farm loo. And it's good job nobody's in there. They think they're being shot at. And there's a terrific crop of acorns this year. And the slight breeze that just got up then loosened one of the acorns in their cups, and they almost fire them out. And you can see on the roof here, there's lots of acorns. And if I put my hand along the little gutter, let's pick some up out of the gutter. Here we go. And there's a bit of moisture in the gutter.
You've got a good harvest there.
And they're really lovely and fresh. And in the gutter, we've had a few showers as well. A little bit of moisture. There we are.
That lovely light brown colour with a tinge of green on either side. Oh, that one's starting to germinate.
Yes, exactly. And surprises everybody just how quickly acorns germinate. And the jays will come and pick them. This is the time of the year there's this terrific relationship between oak trees and jays. Jays are a member of the crow family, but the relationship is between the jay and oak trees is jays have a specially enlarged esophagus. Don't look at me like that. It's just this double chin is normal for Norfolk. And what they do, they swallow 2 or 3 acorns, sometimes 4, and carry the 5th one in their beak. And this urge makes them do that. It's a kind of cacheting urge, and they will go out onto the grass and they'll use molehills and they'll tuck the acorns in for fodder for the winter. But being jays, being what jays are, they sometimes forget where they've made all the caches. And so this is the start of the next generation of acorns, and I think it's absolutely fabulous just to see that little shoot. I don't know if we've got any others. The shoot comes out the top. That one's just beginning to split. And
it's red, isn't it, though?
Yes, it is. So when you see an acorn split in half, when they're ready to germinate like that, the centre of it turns scarlet red. What's amazing about what we talk about when we do the podcast is, right, I'll gather an acorn and I'll take it to the Food Research Institute and say, could you analyse it for me? Analysis will come back and say, Mr. Skinner, your acorn, 82% water, 10% protein, 2% carbohydrate, and that's about it. And of course, it's no relationship between, you know, the physical analysis of an acorn and what we're standing next to. This weighs, 3 or 4 grams. That fellow above our heads, the oak tree, she weighs about 25, 30 tons, that one.
But she came out of that,
yes,
originally.
Yes, exactly. But this acorn, in my head, contains all the knowledge of an oak tree. And that's the bit that the scientists kind of miss.
It's the magic.
It is. That's why natural history is so wonderful, about all the creatures that we see each week when we're just driving round. And that fella's probably 250 years old. So no electricity back then. No idea what a telephone was. Hardly any transport. Probably oxen ploughing the fields. Horses perhaps ploughing the fields here. and how we have changed the world that we live in. And that's why it's important beyond belief to make space for nature, to let natural history have its rightful place in our world as well as the other way round.